Rave Radio. Hello and welcome to the day before the opening of Infocom 2015. I'm Joel Rollins for Rave Radio, and with me is my favorite video conferencing guru, Jim Smith of Polycom. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Joel. Good to be here today.
Jim, last year, about exactly a year ago today, we were sitting here talking about the opening of Infocom 2014, and we were talking about some of the trends that were going to hit in video conferencing, and some of them you said were not quite ready for prime time yet. One of them, and what was the big buzzword, was H.265. Where are we with H.265?
Okay, H.265 has still not been fully deployed by the ITU, so it's not been fully ratified. The call setup functions are still not fully defined. And the interoperation of H.265 endpoints is defined on a manufacturer-by-manufacturer basis right now.
Let me ask, isn't H.265 a compression algorithm, or is it something more than that?
It's the compression algorithm, but part of the compression algorithm is a handshake setup that defines the call parameters when it first is invoked. So the call is invoked in H.323 or SIP, and then they negotiate a set of parameters to operate, which will define the algorithm that's used, 264, 263, 265, and so on. That differentiation and downward mobility of the handshake has not been fully implemented. So right now you can have a 265 system, but it can't call anybody else. It can only do its own thing.
Well, okay, so H.265, not quite ready for prime time. Do people have 265 systems on
the market? Yes, there are a number of 265 capable systems on the market. There's at least one that is fully up and operating H.265, and it requires the top end of their product line in order to implement. One of the side details that usually gets left unsaid about H.265 is that it requires more horsepower from the host. The name is deceptive. The name is High Efficiency Video Coder.
So I've heard that, yeah.
People talk about efficiency and they think that that means it's simpler, it's less compute power, it's less problem, and what it really refers to is it's a smaller bit stream as a result of the originating video. So the efficiency part of it is not anywhere where people think it is, and so it actually requires three times the compute power of H.264 to implement.
Okay, so more computing power produces a smaller stream.
Exactly, and that's how it works, and that's how it's always worked. In the early days of conferencing, we would run into situations where you just ran out of compute in a box, and so it would drop frame rate, it would drop picture elements, and you could tell that you were hitting the wall.
So let me guess that means H.265 will not be a firmware update to existing systems.
Chances are you will never see it as a firmware update. There are at least two engines on the market today that were built with 265 in mind. And those will be a firmware update. And once the software is fully stabilized for the call setup, that'll work too. That'll be a nice little easy update. But all the rest of the equipment, the bridges, things like that, you're going to find a huge amount of hardware update will be required to support 265.
Okay. What's 265 going to do for us?
Well, it allows 4K.
Ah, okay, here we are into the second buzz term from last year.
Yes.
Where are we with 4K now?
4K is it's a lot of pixels.
Uh-huh.
It's big.
Yep.
It's can be a really bright image.
Right.
It's an awful lot of data to try to compress and transmit.
I would think so. Well, I mean, what are people using it for?
The primary uses right now are things like oil and gas exploration and teleradiology.
Okay.
So the ultra high resolution images that people really believe that they need, and I'm not going to qualify that. The 4K is their savior.
Sure.
And it's just because it's the most pixels.
I guess since I don't do oil and gas exploration or teleradiology, my clients are mostly banks and hedge funds.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw 4K for was multipoints, but. I seem, from talking to you earlier, I seem to think there's a problem with that.
Well, it's a misconception again. The way multipoint works is, typically, each far-end codec will send a reduced resolution image to the host device, and then the host device composites those images into a full-size image. So in a 4K displayed image, the endpoints would send 1080p, and then four of those would get built together into a 4K image. Now, that could work out really nicely if you had a 100-inch display and people were sitting 6 feet off of it.
Right.
But
luckily, I will have some of that.
Well, good. It's a nice thing. But in the grand scheme of talking heads, typical bankers, typical stockbrokers, typical users of conferencing technology aren't going to be able to realize any benefit from 4K. And a lot of the 4K systems that are being prototyped right now are composites of 1080p systems. So they stack up a quad block of 1080p displays, and now I've got a 4K display in the image process, and get things scaled up so that the appearance is of 4K. So there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors that's still going on.
Okay. And I take it, does Polycom show a 4K system this year?
We don't have one here at the show, but we do have a 4K system in play. The Real Presence Immersive Studio is a 4K system. 4K display, it's got multiple 4K cameras. It doesn't transmit 4K, but it renders 4K on screen.
I see. Okay, so what should we be looking for exciting at the show this year? I mean, you're deeply immersed in that conferencing market.
One exciting thing for me this year is Microsoft is actually here.
Ah, yes, with something more than Microsoft Sofa.
Yes, they had pallets and pallets of furniture and pallets of large displays, 84-inch multi-touch displays.
The Microsoft Surface Hub.
Surface Hub, exactly. Embedded camera, embedded microphones, embedded compute, all in the system that is a giant Link client.
Okay.
But Link has also been rebranded. One of the things, other things that you'll see at the show this year is a big rush of rebranding. Microsoft Link is now Skype for Business. And as Skype for Business, it's a environment where things haven't changed, but there's new capabilities that are allowed by the Skype recognition. Some of it is directory linkage, some of it is user interface simplicity, but in the largest part, it's a recognition factor for the millennials, folks who had no idea what Link is, but they know what Skype is.
Yeah, I have, you know, mixed feelings at this point about Link, in that, you know, I have clients asking about Link, but not doing a lot of Link yet. I mean, Microsoft statistics will tell you 70% of the Fortune 500 use Link. My impression is it's more like 70% of the Fortune 500 have Link because they got it with their, you know, enterprise system, but aren't terribly using it yet. So I've been pushing clients into systems that are Link compatible, but will still allow SIP 323, that kind of thing.
Now that's a real big concern. Microsoft had made announcements about a year ago that Link and Skype for Business was going to be the universal communication and standard. So that implies that they'd be able to talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime. But the setup of that system still requires a federation between the originating directory service and the destination directory service. It will only talk to another Link client. It won't talk to a standards-based system. So they have to be enhanced by other products from other companies. Otherwise, they're not truly universal. So there's things that people have to be aware of that will make the environment work the way the customer expects it to, but not necessarily the way it's positioned.
Now, I keep using the term Link, and I really should be saying Skype for Business.
Absolutely,
now.
Yes, sir.
Okay, one of the things about rebranding, I mean, when Microsoft bought Skype, I said, okay, there was a smart move, because whether those of us in the professional industry want to admit it or not, a very large percentage of the world's video conferences are done using Skype. But Skype for Business is not Skype, correct?
Well, Skype for Business is the underpinnings of Link.
Right.
Done in a secure manner in a controlled network environment.
Okay.
Remember, Skype used OpenRelay in the network as its mechanism to get data from point A to point B. And when you've got OpenRelay, you've got the potential for security breach.
Sure.
So Skype would not really be usable for things like telemedicine or anything that required patient or client confidentiality.
Sure.
So they've got to be careful of that. But Skype for Business is a whole different story. It's fully secure, fully controlled. And the end result is it meets all the requirements for client confidentiality.
Okay. All right. So it's actually becoming ready for prime time.
I would say yes.
Okay. One of the other things that happened that I'm excited about at this one is we've been doing a lot of UVC-based systems. I mean, and the brand name that I've been using is Vadio, although AMX has a system, things like that. I'm, as you know, and we work together quite a lot, I'm a big collaboration fan,
yes.
Right? And you know, in my collaboration world, one of the ones I use most often is unfortunately a product of a competitor of yours. I really like WebEx. And the idea of UVC, of being able to plug my computer in to a USB connection in the room and take advantage of the room's cameras, speakers, all that, really appeals to me. Are the other conferencing companies moving in that direction? Are we adding it? Or?
Well, there's a view of creating an enabling technology. So you've got a company with cameras that have particularly unique aspects. They auto frame, they auto track, whatever. And the customer wants to take advantage of that into their PC-based environment. So in order to do that, you have to have some sort of adapter that the PC client understands, but doesn't render the originating devices useless. The problem becomes if you've got cascades of audio systems or cascades of video systems, you can end up with the devices working against each other.
Right.
And so the integrator, the partner, the people who are responsible for putting these universal systems together have to be aware of the limitations and what is and isn't done at the client perspective. So the WebEx, the GoToMeeting, the Link Business, Skype for Business, whatever, it's going to have its own echo canceller. It's going to have its own video processing. It's going to have some other elements that have to be dealt with on an ongoing basis and with an awareness of what they're going to do.
Right. Okay. Well, here's a final question for you. You're, as I said, you know, deeply embedded in this market. You're one of the people that I call when I'm baffled about something. What are you looking for at this show? What do you think will be exciting?
For me, what I want to see is I want to see the self-aware user interface. I want to see something where you can walk up to a screen, a system, or whatever, and you know immediately what it's for and how to use it. That's what I've been waiting for. I've been waiting for it for 5 years at least. And we keep getting close. We keep seeing things, little tantalizing nuggets of, oh, here's a really great user interface, and then they add a feature and break the user interface workflow.
Right. Now, I will jump in there and say that I think your company has done that with conferencers anyway, better than anybody I've seen. I mean, you can pick up a Polycom remote and use it. But my wife looks at it, and what she likes is that Apple TV remote. You know, four cursor keys and enter.
Absolutely. The left, right, up, down navigation and the enter key, and it's kind of, it becomes that self-aware user interface.
Right.
And I think you'll see some migration to that in the other conferencing manufacturers as they improve their software, as they improve their local housekeeping processing. Because a lot of that lives under the layer of the housekeeping. And without enough housekeeping processor, and almost everybody shirked the housekeeping side of things in lieu of creating enough compression engine.
Sure.
So, you're going
to
see.
So what you're saying is we're going to need to devote more processor power to user interface?
Absolutely correct, yes. And it's kind of like the iPad, iPhone, iTouch, whatever devices, bring your own device, where there's a huge amount of processing that's present in that object, and that gets leveraged to higher quality user interface.
Okay, that makes all kind. Do you think you're going to see it?
I'm hoping. I'm just hoping. It's the thing that I really want to see because I want to experience it.
Okay. Will you come back afterwards and tell us if you found it?
Absolutely, I will.
Okay, Jim. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Joel, and thanks for all these tries.